Hello, Sunday Night's Main Event listeners. Jason Agnew here, and we've got one of our podcasts that we do on a weekly basis for you coming up next. It is a free sample of The Old Fucks. Yeah, that's right. So it's All Elite Weekly, but it's my longtime co-host, Dan the Mouth Lavransky, along with his partner, Joe Aguinaldo. They are The Old Fucks parodying The Young Bucks, and they're giving you a Dynamite review. So remember, each and every week, these guys get together to review Dynamite. To get this podcast every week, just sign up at patreon.com/SNMEradio. You'll get this show and get daily shows covering the world of pro wrestling. So with that in mind, let's get into it. Dan Lavransky, Joe Aguinaldo, they are The Old Fucks reviewing Dynamite.
Hello, 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 and hello. We are here once again. It is The Old Fucks, Dan the Mouth Lavransky, Joe Aguinaldo, gonna talk some AEW and whatever else happens to pop into our heads. You never know what could happen as far as that goes. Although, this is a show that we have a lot to talk about. There's a lot of stuff that happened in this show, and storyline-wise, lots of stuff to get to. So, Joe, how are you doing today? How's the never-ending battle in the world of IT?
It's all good. Just busy as hell. Like, I mean... you know, we were kind of talking about this off podcast, but I'm in a weird place at work where, and especially like, I'm in a weird place at work. Like, you know, we're working remotely more and more, like, you know, people are working from home and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think like my problem is I already had an issue with unplugging. So like now that I work at home, it's not like I have that, you know, there's not that like physical action of turning off my computer and taking the laptop off a docking station and then like putting it in my bag, getting in my car and driving home. When I'm working from home, I mean, I'll just keep going. And like, there have been times like, and, you know, especially in the summertime when the days are long where, you know, I'll be working. And then, you know, my wife, Sophie, will yell downstairs. She'll be like, "What are you doing?" And I'll be like, "I'm working." And she'll be like, "But it's 8 o'clock at night." And I'll be like, "Holy crap." Like, you know what I mean? So I'm at this weird stage of work where I almost feel guilty if I'm not working. Like, even right now, like, I feel kind of bad because I had to log off. I had to make dinner, which, you know, like, this is all life shit. But at the same time, there's that part of me that's like, you should have done a half an hour, a bit more work. And like, I know it's just me being, you know, whatever, like, you know, maybe a workaholic or whatever, but I find now especially that it's really bad. So I actually do enjoy days where I can go to the office because, again, there's that separation of church and state where I can just say, yep, I'm going home, shut down, you got to get out of here. So, but again, I think part of it too is there's just a lot going on right now. But I've always been wired this way, so it's kind of a weird thing right now.
Well, okay, well, let's start off with this show, which kind of got started off with a weird thing, though. Although I think probably most people figured this was how they were going to start. AEW took their time to announce it, unless it was something at the last minute. I don't know, but they didn't really break this story till what, Tuesday, right?
Yeah, and I mean, like, you know, this was after the announcement of the GCW announcement of Moxley versus Homicide at their I think it's January 23rd card. So
this was really bizarre. That's probably why it was, I guess, it came out of the blue like that, is that they AEW obviously wants to have him come back for them first before he comes back for anyone else. You don't want to waste that on some sort of smaller operation. I'm sure Tony Khan wouldn't want that to happen. So it was very weird having the quick announcement on Tuesday, and then all of a sudden the episode is like, oh, so it's not surprising that they would start with this to get the show going. Now, before we start with here, you know, he came down through the crowd and he got in the ring and did a big long promo. This was, you're old enough, I'm sure, to remember the George Carlin routine about the 7 words that you can't say on television.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I just felt like watching tonight's episode, we heard almost all of them. It was like, this was one of the craziest shows for profanity. Oh,
dude, like, right, like, I know you're going to get into the promo, but, like, the first thing that comes out of Moxley's mouth is, you know, get the fuck out of here or whatever it was, right?
Yeah,
and
that's, yeah.
And here's the thing, like, whoever was on the second set, like, maybe whoever was on the delay button at the TV stations, like, missed it, but, man, they missed pretty much every swear word. Now, you know, don't get me wrong, it's not like he was throwing F-bombs and S-bombs all over the place, but there were, like, three or four that they absolutely didn't catch.
Well, I think they didn't catch a lot of them. In fact, I got the impression they weren't even trying. Like, honestly, they're because a lot of the times, you know, at least if they try, they never get it right. But you always have that little gap where they've tried to do it.
Yeah, this,
you weren't
nothing.
Hearing any. Yeah, you weren't hearing any of that on this. So anyways, if you didn't see it, he gets in the ring. The Moxley chants going. There was a welcome back chant. He was just about to start, and the crowd had died down. And there's that one punter still way up in the rafters, and it's like, you can't understand anything he's saying. And Moxley, I'm not sure why went this route, but just said, "Hey, go fuck yourself. Get that guy out of here. He's a piece of shit." And I'm just thinking, wow, I don't know if the TV land, even something like TBS, would be too happy about that right off the top.
Not only that, but I would want to know, what did that guy say? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
couldn't understand any of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he might. But here's the thing. Like, it didn't translate well on TV, but I'm sure Mox could hear it, because that crowd noise was really weird. So what would happen is they were chanting, and then they dropped right down to zero. And you could hear that one guy yelling, and it must have been pretty bad for Mox to say that, because I think if it had been like, you know, "We love you, Mox," or something like that, he either would have ignored it or he would have made a joke about it. So,
yeah, it was very strange, very, very weird reaction, especially since, you know, everyone's going to be loving him as the babyface coming back from successful rehab, right?
Yep.
Like, it's total babyface city. So, yeah, kind of a weird start. So he starts into his promo, and it's quite lengthy, but he's talking first about this weird dream he had where he was on the plane, and he was all busted up on the ground after the plane hit the ground, and he's on the road, and his hands and knees, and he's dirty, and his face is bruised up, and he's cut, and all of a sudden there's this black cloud, a demon hanging over him, the kind of demon that follows you around your whole life. He goes, "The cloud would start laughing at me, tells me that everything I have in my life is good." And he goes, "None of that was supposed to happen. And where do you get off making out with all that?" So this heavy dream about a cloud menacing him about his life. The cloud asked me, "Did you really think you were going to make it?" And he goes, "And finally, though, I woke up before I had a chance to answer. And nobody gets through life unscathed. And we all have scars." And he talked about emotional scars and, you know, the scars on the inside, but we try to cover them up, pretend they aren't there. He goes, "But they're the ones that we should be the most proud of, because they tell our story. They give us strength. They make us who we are. Nobody's perfect. And if we were all perfect, the world would be boring. No one should be afraid to stand up in front of the whole world and bear it all, scars and all, and say, 'Hey, this is me.'" So basically that obviously all stemming back to his rehab and why he was gone and everything. So he goes, "Having said that, though, I'm sure there are a lot of people around the world who want to write me off and doubt me." He goes, "Won't be the first, won't be the last." He goes, "If you want to write me off, say whatever you want and think whatever you want, but I'll tell you the same thing I would have told the cloud, and that's take all the shit and shove it up your ass." So there you go. You've had fuck, shit again, ass. I don't know if ass even counts anymore. He says, "I don't run from demons. I just beat the shit out of them." Oh, there's shit again. And he goes, "And for all of you that have supported me through thick and thin, thank you. We're going on a ride. I'm going on a pilgrimage. I'm going to grab the world of pro wrestling by the balls and do whatever the hell I want, because now more than ever, I am truly free." Crowd's pumped. They're chanting for him. He says, "I've been to hell. I wouldn't recommend it, but it is very liberating. There's no hell that can put that can be put on me that I haven't already gone through. If there is anybody that thinks they can put me through more hell than what I've already gone through, know this: I'm thirsty. And you thought I was dangerous before. Now all I drink is blood. So there you go. I mean, it's basically what I expected it would be. You know, he comes back. I had the tough journey. It was, you know, but I made it through. I'm here and I'm back and I'm ready to kick ass.
Dude, I really love that promo. I thought that promo hit all the right buttons. It felt really real. Like, look, we already know Mox is a good promo. Okay. We don't even have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Right? But the added layer, knowing that everyone in that building knew what he was coming back from and the way that he worded that promo, I just thought that was one of the best promos that I've heard in a long time. Like, I'm putting that up there with, like, you know, the pipe bomb promo and, like, the, you know, the hard times promo. You know what I mean? Like, but here's the thing. It wasn't like there was a lot of, like, you know, like, you know, Dusty Rhodes, you know, he had the gift of the, he had the jive, he had the rap, right? Like, this was just like, what I really like about it was just, I could really feel that promo. And so I completely dug that promo. I mean, I really don't have much to add to it. Like, I could gush a lot, but I'm just going to leave it at, I was very, very impressed with that promo. It was one of the few promos, like, you know, even above and beyond, say, something like the pipe bomb, which was a very good promo, where I actually felt the promo, and that was huge for me. So I really, really, really liked it. Add to the fact, like, John Moxley can talk. Like, he's already used reality to push the work. This one, I felt he was like, you know, this was like one of those instances where here's a guy that he kind of lets you in a bit more than he normally would. And you could see that. And that's the way I felt about the promo. So, like, I have nothing but good things to say about that promo. And by the way, I was looking online just to see if I could find any information about why he told that fan to go fuck yourself type of deal. So apparently, according to TMZ, the fan was shouting something like, get the trash out of the ring. And he was actually booing Moxley's speech or something. Or he was booing Moxley. So that's why that guy got that guy got sort of yelled at.
Okay, so before we move on, what do we do with him now? What's the first program? What happens now that he's back? Do you put him, like, in the title picture already? Like, you know, there are, it's what happens now?
Well, I mean, didn't they have that promo with, I think Ethan Page is going to be his first victim, so to speak, right?
Right, yeah.
So, yeah. I, you know what, I think at this time, like, you've got Lance Archer right now in the title picture. Yeah, I think, like, you put him in a higher card program, higher mid card program. Like, I don't know, maybe a Danielson or something to that. Like, I think what they do is they get him a couple of matches just to get his feet back into it. But at the end of the day, I think within 2 or 3 weeks, they're going to have him in a high level program. And, you know, I've read, you know, people suggesting Danielson. I would be all for Danielson and John Moxley getting into a program, maybe for, you know, the contendership to the belt or something like that. But I think, you know, I think, like, the one thing that I've noticed about AEW for the most part is that, like, you know, when they've had to make adjustments, they've been pretty successful with it. Like, again, case in point, Bryan Danielson. Well, now you got Mox back. You're adding a star player to the roster. Granted, there's a lot of star players already, but I think that given the fact that they were going to push Moxley, and I still think they want to, yeah, I think they're going to put him in that high level program, you know, give him a solid, you know, victory at, you know, whatever pay-per-view, and then let's get him chasing the title.
After the big promo there from Moxley, that was a lot. So you had to take a break after that. We come back, another promo with MJF and Wardlow. They're backstage somewhere. MJF says, last week was an abomination, an embarrassment to the great sport, when your hero CM Punk took powerbomb after powerbomb until he got early spinal stenosis. He got powerbombed so many times. And he goes, and what did he do? Instead of taking the loss on the chin like a man, he decided to take the easy way out and pull Wardlow in by his hair and tights and get a tainted pinfall victory. And then he said, Granted gets the little dig, and he says, granted, if Wardlow had more seasoning, I'm sure he would have reversed it. He goes, but that's not what I'm here to talk about. And he turns to Wardlow. He goes, I'm here to apologize. And he goes, and Wardlow's like, you know, got the surprised look on his face. And he says, not only have you been a stellar employee, but you've been a great friend of mine for the better part of 2 years and 2 months. He goes, it's your birthday, and my gift to you is a sincere apology. He says, I lost my cool on you last week, and that's not okay. But then he goes, says, however, big man, you did put your hands on me, and that's something I can't allow because it sets a bad precedent for everybody in the company. He goes, much as it pains me to do this, I have to dock your pay. He goes, but if you make good and qualify for the title contender ladder match and win me the TNT title, then that money will go right back up. And then he said, I believe in you, just like I believe in the greatest accountability buddy, the chairman, Sean Spears. And I believe that he is going to give PG Punk his first L in the company. And he's going to show the world and you how to get the job done. He said, I'll be there to call all the action because I'm Maxwell J. Friedman, la, 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 and I'm better than you. And then before he says the last line, he puts his arm around Wardlow and he says, and you know it, like as to say, and Wardlow, you know I'm the boss, basically saying he's better without saying it. So there you go, a slight bit of reconciliation from MJF, but then, of course, he just twists right back again. I enjoyed that part of it.
Dude, I don't know how this show doesn't appeal to the older demo because that was a classic heel promo. Absolutely. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, he pulled the tights, even though you know he didn't pull the tights. You know, apologizing to Wardlow, you know, but docking his pay. Like, this is like old school Bobby Heenan stuff going on here. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get it. Like, I thought this was, like, if anything, it was like, it was like, if this even makes sense, like it was one of the, it was a good promo, but at the same time in my head, I'm thinking, just another good promo from MJF because that's what we expect from this guy. You know what I mean? He's really good. So, again, nice little breadcrumbs, nice little seed planting, nice little, you know, let's add a little bit of fuel to the fire for when the, you know, hopefully when that turn happens. But nothing to complain here. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, it was fun. And Wardlow, you know, didn't have to say anything.
Nope, just, you know, his facial expressions.
Yeah, he just did it with his face and stuff. Didn't have to say a damn thing. Yeah, So pretty cool. Okay, after this, mixed tag, Adam Cole, Britt Baker, Orange Cassidy versus Chris Statlander, mixed tag. This one was, it wasn't too bad. The ladies started out, but of course Britt tags out instantly, and then Cole did the same thing with Orange, basically teasing this whole you've got to switch members of the team when the other one tags out. Orange was teasing his weak kicks with Britt. She actually stomped on his toe, which I thought was pretty funny.
I thought that, you know what, like before you get any further, I got to tell you. So like as much as I like all the participants in the match, okay, I'll admit I wasn't necessarily interested in this match. I talked about this with you last week, but they won me over. I just thought this was a fun match. Like, I'm not going to call it a five-star classic.
Yeah, exactly.
But
it
was very entertaining. I have to give them that.
They did do some fun stuff in it, right?
Like except this, for the end when we get there. So
okay. But like this, I loved this one where Statlander had the big long vertical suplex on Britt. She's just holding her up. And then Orange just walks in and just like pushes her and they go down. I thought that was hilarious stuff.
Yeah. Like, there was some good little spots happening in this match.
And they did a lot of that until, they got to this point where they wanted to go to break, and then Cole and Britt kind of take over and we go into pick and pick, and Cole works over Orange through most of that. Eventually Statlander gets a Blue Thunder Bomb on Britt at one point. Britt got the swinging neck breaker. I love that she uses the swinging neck breaker.
Oh, I love when she does that move. She does it's it so really cool. Well.
It's such an old, again, such an old school move. And I love that she
and
does.
And you know what? Like, Tony Khan has to tell people nobody is allowed to use that move except for Britt.
Yeah, yeah. Britt gave Orange the curb stomp while the Cole had the ref distracted. Statlander did get the area 451 on Britt, and Cole, who was on top of Britt, who he was trying to protect her. So basically, she squashed both of them.
That was a good looking 451, by the way.
That's good, yeah, especially with him there as well. Orange tried to do a dive over the top rope, but Cole caught him with a kick. But it didn't really look good. They kind of, I don't know, it just wasn't quite on point.
It wasn't crisp at all. That was
Yeah. Britt did the Canadian Destroyer on Statlander on the ramp. Cole gave Orange the Panama Sunrise, but he did kick out. Crowd went pretty wild for that. Cole and Britt, they grabbed a table from the ring announcer and set it up outside the ring. Cole threw Orange into the ropes while Britt was standing on the apron right above the table. So Orange bumps into her. She falls backwards and takes the bump through the table, which I got to hand it to her, man. She sold it huge.
Like she did.
Those ones where went through a table and was up 2 minutes later. Like she totally sold it right until the end of the match. So obviously he sees Britt go through the table. So Cole's definitely not happy. He gives Orange a low blow and then he gives him the boom flying knee and he gets the pin. So Cole and Britt win the match.
So, like I said, I enjoyed the match up until the end. The table spot was fine, but you could see that coming from a mile away. What I'm not digging is this whole Adam Cole, like, low blow thing. You know what I mean? Like, do it once is one thing, but this is now becoming, like, the dick punch feud with AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura. It's like, come on. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're a better heel. Like, I'm not saying that that's not a heel move. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. But
you're a better heel than that. So, like, again, one low blow, I'm cool. But, like, he's been doing it now pretty much the entire time with Orange Cassidy. And it, like, it's just, it's frustrating because I know he's better than that. And, like, this match to me proves it. Like, I wasn't looking forward to this match. They won me over until the low blow. And then I was like, really? Like, okay. you know?
Right.
So, like, and again, I get it. I understand that that's the thing. It is a heel move. I'm not saying it's not, but I just think that Adam Cole can be better than that. And look, I hated it when AJ Styles was doing it because I know AJ Styles is a much better like wrestler than that too.
Okay, so from here we go to Alex Marvez backstage with Jericho and Santana and Ortiz. Marvez said next week that 2.0 and Daniel Garcia would take on the Inner Circle, as in Jericho and Santana and Ortiz. Jericho said he didn't give a rat's ass about Eddie Kingston. As far as he's concerned, he said you could GFY. I don't know why Jericho felt he needed to use initials. Everybody else was already swearing up a storm. He could have, I'm sure, easily slipped another one in there. He starts to go on about 2.0 and Garcia, and right at that, he hardly gets to say anything because he takes the shot at Kingston, and Ortiz gets in his face and says, hey, with all due respect, you might not care about Kingston, but we do. He goes, so tread carefully when you mention his name. And then Santana spoke up as well and said, but hey, not only that, but last week Eddie made a comment that rang with some truth. He says, maybe you are the reason we aren't tag champions. He goes, everybody from the Elite, the Pinnacle, Garcia, and 2.0, we've been fighting your battle since day one. He goes, when have you had our back? And Jericho, of course, like, look, man, I've always had your back. And Santana cuts him off right away. He goes, when have you truly had our backs? He goes, maybe next week we'll prove we don't need you to win. Maybe next week we'll focus on us instead of this, meaning the Inner Circle. He said, you feel me? And Santana and Ortiz left, and Jericho very sarcastically did him, no, I don't feel you. But you could tell he was upset, that which was the really cool part about it, because he did that smarmy line, but at the same time, he managed to convey.
He looked concerned.
Yes, he managed to convey concern. So I really enjoyed, because I'm really curious to see how this plays out.
Dude, I'm just glad that, like, Santana and Ortiz, like, for lack, and I don't mean it like Jericho's treating him like crap, but I just like the fact that Santana and Ortiz stood up. That was such a strong little promo from both of those guys.
It was very good, and
yeah,
it was very interesting. It's intriguing. Where does it go?
Yep.
I mean, if they get in a feud with Jericho, what happens? Does Jericho get an outside person to as a partner to feud with them? And then once they break away, as you and I have always talked about, then we'll get to see them with all the tag teams. So
yeah, and that's what I want to see. Like,
I think everybody does.
Yeah, like they're a top team, but. Like, and look, maybe at the beginning when AEW was sort of, getting its feet wet, the Inner Circle was the main event. Not going to deny that. But at this point, the Inner Circle, as much as I like the concept, it's getting a little stale, and it's time for Santana and Ortiz to finally get into, the best tag team division in wrestling, as opposed to being, like they say, backups to Jericho. Because I think Santana and Ortiz are like they're long underutilized. They got to get back in there, man.
Yeah, it's for sure. For very true. Okay, so we had another break after that. We come back. Alex Marvez is with Cole. With Adam Cole, he said, "You were victorious, but Britt took quite the fall." Cole just said, "Get out of here," and he did. Alex ran away very quickly. He said, "Orange Cassidy has been a thorn in my side for far too long." Then he decides to put his hands on my girlfriend. He goes, "I've done everything. I beat you in singles competition. I beat you in a mixed tag. What more do I need to do?" He goes, and then it hit me. Next week is beach break, and next week, instead of you being a thorn in my side, I'm going to destroy you. He goes, "I propose next Wednesday, Adam Cole versus Orange Cassidy in an anything goes, no DQ, lights out match." He goes, "I can't stand to look at your stupid face any longer, and it's about time I ended your pathetic career." So there you go. That'll be your heavy gimmick match for the Beach Blast show next week, or Beach Break, I guess it's called. Sorry, Beach Break.
So I guess we're going to get another gory self-mutilation match.
Yeah, this will have color in it for sure. Yeah, no, it's AEW. This will have color.
I'm taking the shot there. Sorry, I didn't mean it. But yeah, you know what? Like, again, I get it. And, it makes sense. But, whatever. I'm not.
Yeah,
I think you already know I don't care about these gimmick matches, right?
Well, they seem to want to play off the connection that Britt has already had one of these. They were talking about that. But yeah, I mean, again, it's next week with the Beach show, it's kind of a special above average show.
Right? Yeah.
I understand why they have a match like that on there.
Yeah. Like, again, I'm talking specifically my own sort of sensibilities about wrestling. I'm sure I'm sure a lot of people are going to be excited that, this match is going to happen, but it's, for me, it's just kind of like, it's going to be, like a big cluster. And I'm sure I like Adam Cole. I like Orange Cassidy. They're both good workers. I'm sure they're going to put something, really exciting together. I wouldn't be shocked if they win me over, but my initial reaction when I heard that was just meh,
Yeah, it'll be interesting. That's for sure. Now, before we carry on here, I have a question. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is the show next week is Beach Break, right? It's in Cleveland. Why isn't it Cleveland? What? How does Cleveland make you think of the beach? I was like, they announced it. I was thinking like, oh, cool. I'm like, oh, they must be doing another show in Florida or something. Like, it's in Cleveland. I'm like, what? Thought that was kind of bizarre that it's
I mean they have Edgewater Beach, isn't that popular? I don't know. Yeah. I know nothing about Cleveland.
All right, so from here we went to this quick little piece, Punk versus Spears, little promo piece that we're going to see the match later in the show. They showed some of Spears' promo that he did on Rampage about not playing between the lines. There'll be no warning. I'll never apologize. I'm the guy you don't see coming. Punk says, MJF, you're running out of bodies. You're running out of luck. And before you know it, you're going to have to get in the ring with me in the place you least want to fight, CM Punk. This led to CM Punk versus Sean Spears. Did you catch it? Someone had a sign in the crowd that said MJF sniffs farts.
No, I did not see that.
That is a very strange heel sign, I thought. I'm like, wow. But that is heelish. I'm like, oh, it's disgusting as well.
Or a very weird fetish, for sure. Yeah,
I guess that's it. That's a heel fetish, I guess, sniffing farts. MJF, he came out to do commentary. This was crazy. I really did not expect them to do this. I was completely shocked, but they basically did. They get in there, bell rings, Spears runs at Punk. Punk gives him GTS. And, like, that's it. It was done. He pins him. I'm like, wow. I mean,
you know, yeah, what? Like, I was
it's
shocked.
It's so weird. And, again, it's backwards to me. Like, this should happen before Wardlow has a match with Punk. Like, to me, this should, again, this is, it all seems backwards. And then I just thought, well, this is just, it's ridiculous. This was, like, no threat at all. Like, I don't know. I really thought they would let Spears have some of it. I can't believe they just jobbed him out so quick like that.
Like, here's the thing. I actually probably liked it better than you did. I thought it was, like, I was shocked too, but I was kind of like, that's cool. Like, I like the way they did it. But I do feel bad for Sean Spears because I was kind of hoping that he would at least get a little bit of a showcase, you know, against CM Punk. But he was basically, you know, treated like, you know, a jobber. And I feel bad for the dude because I want to see that guy do well.
Yeah.
That's the other part of it. Like again, not so much the wrestling side, but just from the, like, Sean Spears as a person. You know, I know that's a guy that has had a lot of stop and starts. And I think he's been doing a lot of really good work as this accountability buddy stuff. And just, yeah, like, to have him being treated like, say, Brandon Cutler, that just didn't sit well with me.
Yeah, it was weird. I really thought they could have given Spears a bit and not hurt, and you could have still had the same outcome.
Yeah,
sure. I didn't think it needed to be instantly into a GTS.
But that said, he did sell that GTS really well. I'll give him that.
So after the quick win here, MJF runs down. He tries to get in the ring. Punk catches him, grabs him by the scarf, tries to go after him. But, of course, MJF bails out of there fast. Punk's got the scarf. He rubs it on his sweaty body. That's how the segment ended. Okay. This Billy Gunn is backstage. I think Excalibur even set this up. Something like, and Billy Gunn is backstage with a cameraman. I'm like,
yeah, oh, actually, okay. he said he has commandeered a camera.
Yeah, I'm like, what? Oh, okay. So yeah, it goes to Billy Gunn telling the cameraman what he wants to shoot, and Christian walks up, Billy Gunn says to Christian, oh, yeah, thanks for making me wait all night. He goes, I know you show up whenever you want. And Christian said, hey, yeah, good to see you too. And Gunn said his boys were ranked in the top five, so I think it's time they get a tag team title shot with your boys, Jurassic Express. Christian says, oh, that's what you think? There's no doubt that Austin and Cole have talent. They got your genes. They're big, they're strong, they're fast. He goes, but when the lights were the brightest, you never got the statement win. He goes, you know what they say, Gunn, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And he goes, make a statement and we'll talk. And Christian tried to leave, but then the Gunn boys come in, they take him out, and then all three of them are working him over. They throw him into this garage door, bounce him off the wall a few times, and then they leave him lying. And then I don't know if it was Colt or Austin. One of them went up to him, said a statement made. So obviously looks like the Guns are going to get a shot at the Jurassic Express.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, again, it makes sense. I don't think anyone expects the Gun Club to win the belt, but it's a, you know, it's a good viable team, you know, to put against Jurassic Express and sort of build them up for their next, whatever their next big feud is going to be. So no problems here. Again, I'm not going to say it was outstanding, but I'm not going to say it was horrible. It was there. It was good. It was an entertaining little, you know, segment. And we'll see where it goes.
Okay. Now the other big return of the night here.
Oof.
After Jon Moxley, and that is Cody. And yeah, so we have quite the promo here from Cody as well. This is inventive way of pick and pick. They went to break right as Cody's coming to the ring, and they used pick and pick, and they just said, Cody, all right, take your time, walk around, do some stuff. And that's great. That's, to me, I think, how it should be done, rather than, you know, I mean, I'm sure you can't always set it up to someone's entrance, but that type of pick and pick's not nearly as annoying because you're not missing any major parts of a match.
No, remember they used to do that with MJF all the time where
right,
it'd be like MJF's coming to the ring, we're going to pick and pick, and you would just see him jawing with people in the audience as he's coming down the ramp. And
Yeah. That's
like perfect. Like, I'm not missing anything, but at the same time I can still like I'm not missing anything important. I'm missing, you know, I'm watching Cody Rhodes come down and, you know, pull a ladder out of the ring. Like, you know,
right. Whatever,
right? So
And same with the one they do later in the show with Sammy with his cue cards.
Yep,
that type
exactly.
of stuff is always good for that, right? Okay, so he gets down there. He's in the ring. He's getting booed and he's getting cheers. He looks at the crowd mischievously and says, what do you guys want to talk about? And he says, I'm reminded of that last match about a man who once, I'm reminded by that last match, I guess the match he's talking about before this. He goes, about a man who once stood on a stage just like that, looked in a ring just like this, and he gave one of the most important addresses in the history of our sport. It inspired thousands of would-be wrestlers. It mobilized millions of fans. It was the first hit of a revolution. I am talking about CM Punk. And the pipe bomb. So Cody's going to talk about Punk. He says, someone told me to save this promo, but I don't know if I'll ever get the chance, so I'm going to do it now. Whatever that means. He said, in that interview, he laid out a roadmap, meaning Punk, listing things for him that for somebody like me were taboo at the time. He's going to New Japan. He's going to work with Ring of Honor. And ultimately, he would talk about teaming with the Young Bucks. And as destiny and fate would have it, he was unable to do those things. But he would join. And he stopped because of a shut. He had to stop here, basically, you know, because the crowd was giving him a shut the fuck up chant. But he just basically ignored it. He stopped for a bit, then he just ignored it. He said, he would end up being part of what Pro Wrestling Illustrated called the comeback of the year, meaning Punk again. But if we're being honest with each other, it's the comeback of the decade. We are living it and loving it. And then he's getting cheered at this point. He goes, but then there's a Cody sucks chant as well. And Cody says, but in his absence, in the void CM Punk left behind when he left, somebody did do each and every one of those things that he didn't do. He said, I did. He goes, I carried every ounce of anti-monopoly sympathy on my shoulders. I held every grain of the revolution in my hand, and each and every one of you cheered. He goes, you want to ask why I didn't turn heel? Because you cheered me when I needed it the most. When it said there was more than one royal family in wrestling, I am talking about me and all of us. People talk about the forbidden door. It's a proper noun in vernacular. But if you're an industry journalist and you disagree with anything I say here tonight, you're not a journalist. Check the receipt. Check the date. Before there was a forbidden door, I was the one who built it. That got some cheers and a Cody chant.
And then he said, this was like the crowd was really weird in this promo.
Yeah. Well, and I think rightfully so, because it's a weird promo. I want to get through it and before we talk about it. He goes, and I'm gone for 2 weeks, and I see that the Young Bucks in the opening segment last week almost started the Wednesday Night Wars all over again. He goes, I know Red Dragon graduated hip toss class with flying colors, but I don't need to see the Bucks beat developmental more than once. That got a lot of boos. He goes, then my real life friend Ricky Starks gets into it with Jay Lethal. And he said, word to the wise, the lethal injection is the one cutter in the business people don't kick out of. Avoid, avoid, avoid. And then he starts going on about one of the most talented black guys you're going to see later, Malakai Black. He said, a guy who hung two losses on my name and everyone knows I hate to lose. A man who needed no help, but to add insult to injury, did get help in the form of his size and speed and strength. He goes, I know we're not in the business of renaming people like Gunnar McGillibuddy.
I thought that was hilarious.
That's a reference to the Gunnar thing going on in NXT.
You mean Gunther?
Gunther,
yeah, yeah.
With Walter,
yeah,
changing Walter's name to Gunther. He goes, but you know, it's not just speed and strength, but balls. If you come to AEW and you call yourself Brody, you've got balls. He goes, I'll let you find out in 8 years what a mistake that was when the kid shows up. So some reference to Negative One there. He said, but speaking of Brody, Darby, Miro, and of the TNT champ Sammy Guevara, he goes, these are men, a legacy of champions who taught you what you've been taught against. He goes, you've been considered for 20 years that any title without the word world in it was a secondary belt. He goes, we don't have secondary belts, and the only way it's secondary is right now. And there's two. He said, I think it's pretty clear what we do. He goes, I know Tony Khan has sent a contract in the mail to Sammy and myself, and maybe it's not the contract I wanted, but the point is, at Beach Break, two titles, one champion. What do you say, Sammy? He climbed up the ladder with the title. I don't know, man. I wasn't a big fan of this promo. I just thought it was like way meandering around too much and way too much inside type stuff. Like, you know, you don't go, I don't want to hear lines like, you want to ask me why I don't want to turn heel? Like, I don't want it. There's got to be better ways to deal with it than that. I don't know. And I just thought trying to cover way too much ground at once too. Like, you're talking about, you know, your own situation first, and now you're talking about Punk, and then you're talking about the Forbidden Door, and now you're talking about wrestling journalists, and now you're talking about Red Dragon and Developmental and Ricky Starks and Jay Lethal and Malachi Black and Gunnar McGillibuddy. It's just like, I don't know. I was not a big fan of it. I didn't really think it was good at all.
Complete opposite. I dug this promo, but I like
really.
Cody Rhodes. Yeah, I like Cody Rhodes. I think, like, I'm not going to disagree. There was a lot of stuff going on in this promo. Yes, there was a lot of inside stuff going on with this promo. He could have maybe backed
too
off
much.
On that.
There was too much of that, man. Yeah.
But again, at the end of the day, I enjoyed the promo. Like, I dug what he was saying. Wow. Like, I like the fact that he, you know, he came, like, because I look at it differently. He started with the CM Punk pipe bomb, right? Then he said that, you know, but, you know, Punk wanted to do all these things, never did. So when Punk left, someone did it. I did this stuff. And like, I to be honest with you, I thought, oh, is he turning heel? Then he said, I won't turn heel. And I thought, ooh, okay, so we're swerving here. And then he talked about, like, you know, the Forbidden Door. This is all the stuff that the AEW fan talks about. Forbidden Door, he said he built it. Not entirely untrue. And then, you know, he talked about what happened when he wasn't at TV. Talked about, you know, he made the reference to the Young Bucks and Red Dragon. He talked about, the, you know, the Lethal. I dug this promo. I know Cody gets a lot of hate. I get it. I know a lot of people. He's a very polarizing figure. But I really enjoyed the promo, and I really liked his passion about it. Yeah, people might not like him. People may think he's entitled. Absolutely understand that viewpoint. But ultimately, I dug this promo. But yes, I'm not going to disagree. I thought it might have been a tad inside. So,
yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like the Lambert thing with me. I understand that a lot of your fan base is going to groove on that kind of stuff. But I think there's a line that you need to have that you shouldn't cross. And it's just too much after a while. And I really did. I don't know. I don't know if it's Cody's delivery itself, but I didn't feel any real passion in it either. And maybe that was part of what's missing.
See,
for me.
I think I'm not going to say he doesn't have passion, but I think the problem is, like, he does feel, especially when he talks about, like, I won't turn heel because, you know, you cheered me when I needed you the most. To me, that's pandering. And a lot of people don't want to be pandered to, especially this fan base. Right. So I understand that. Right. But at the same time, I just thought it was a good promo. I thought he had a good story. He, you know, it made sense. And yes, he did cover a lot of stuff, but yeah, I had no problem with it. But again, I'm a Cody fan, so I totally understand if people hate it, you know, like I get it. 'Cause again, he certainly can come across as maybe a little, egotistical, you know, and again, as an EVP and all that stuff, the fact that he's, you know, doing the, what is it, the Go Big Show, and he's, you know, he might be going Hollywood or whatever you want to call it. So I get it, but yeah, I like this promo a lot. Not like the Moxley promo though. Like, here, I'll give you the difference. The Moxley promo, I felt that. Like, I genuinely felt that, right?
Yeah. But that's exactly what I would say here. I didn't feel this with the Cody one. I didn't get any kind of passion out of it like I did with, say, the Moxley one.
No, and again, I get that. You're right. And again, I'm going to say it. At times, Cody does come across as pandering, which can be very annoying. But, you know, I do think at times he's sincere. I think at times he does come up with some good points. But, I mean, you know, like we also have been saying, Cody is a very, very polarizing figure. So not at all surprised that, yeah, like, you know, if you look at the Facebook page last night, right, when the Cody promo came on, lots of people were like, I hate this, you know, F Cody, Cody sucks. And then there were a lot of people that were like, hey, I really like that promo. I think, you know, it was a very clever promo. Right, it was entertaining. Right. So, you know, and again, like, think about
Bless
it.
Yeah,
like John Cena, same thing, man. You have like the people who love Cena, and then you have the people that are like, Cena sucks. So I think Cody is, you know, rightly, wrongly, unfortunately, fortunately, is getting to that level. You know, and I'm curious because I honestly think let's face it, he's already a heel. He's just not admitting that he's a heel, right? So very interesting with Cody. Like, I am not a Cody hater, but I understand the Cody hate.
Okay, so just because you mentioned it really quick, I don't know if you've had a chance to see any. I'm guessing no, because you're super busy. But you mentioned John Cena. I watched the first three episodes of Peacemaker.
Oh, I watched the I started sort of scrubbing through it. I'm waiting for a few more episodes before watching it. But the one scene that I saw, which I thought was hilarious, and I hope this isn't a spoiler for anyone, was when they're eating in the diner and they're like, can you take your helmet off? I just thought that was hilarious. And I don't know why.
It's not bad. It's not bad. I think it's got real potential.
From the Suicide Squad, I really do appreciate like John Cena's acting. I thought he did a great job. He was funny. You know, he was an ass. I think this is going to be fun. Granted though, I am somewhat biased towards superhero films anyways, but from what I saw, it was good, but I haven't watched it all yet, but it does look like a fun show. Also, I need to mention, so I was listening to the Sunday Night Show with Mike McGuire and Boris was on it, and Matt was on it, and Matt said that Peacemaker was like Marvel, and I'm like, nah, man, it's DC. Matt, if you ever make that mistake again, I'm gonna have to come find you, and we're gonna have words, buddy.
I watched the first three episodes, and it's done enough that I'm going to continue to watch it for now. So I thought overall it was a funny concept. I mean, there's classic tropes there, you know, that you can see are going to unfold as they go along. But overall, I thought it was entertaining, and it was, you know, it's quite the shot for Cena to be basically helming a series like that. You know, that's pretty amazing.
That's pretty cool. Oh, actually, since we're talking about this, and I know we're digressing here, but the Jade Cargill thing is up next, so I don't mind not talking about it for the next little bit. So have you seen the trailers for Moon Knight?
No, I've seen pictures of the outfit and what he'll look like in that.
Dude,
the trailer yet. Yeah, I always liked that comic. I would check that one out.
I'm going to check that out big time. But yeah, like, it's like, that was the one where when I saw that, I was like, oh, wow. Because that's like, I mean, that, like, now we're really going deep into the depth roster.
Yeah. they're starting to realize. Well, that's the smart thing is that it is like that. Like, you know, both DC and Marvel are have long histories and legacies, and there's tons of things to pull from and work with that these guys can work, you know, for decades. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I always like it when they do stuff like that.
Cool. Anyway, sorry, Ben.
Yeah, let's get back.
All right, here we go.
Like you said, yeah. So this was Tony's backstage with Johnny Hungy and Anna Jay and Sterling and Cargill. Tony said Jade has issued an open challenge and Anna Jay has stepped up. He asked Anna Jay if she has what it takes to stop Jade. Sterling, she doesn't even get to say anything, and Sterling said no, she probably doesn't. He said Jade is absolutely undefeated at 24-0. Now, this is a new year. I thought, don't the rankings change for the new year?
I thought so too, unless they're, you know, because they do, they will, like, say for 2021 or 2022, it'll be like in the big numbers, if you look at the rankings, it'll say like 2-0, but they also do have an overall ranking, like kind of in the background. Okay. So they use whichever one they need for storyline purposes.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, he brings up the Jade's undefeated at 24-0. He goes, but we are thrilled to accept this challenge. Johnny Silver says 24-0, Anna, show him those arms. He goes, those are 24-inch arms. And he goes, Anna's ranked number two, and she's going to be the number one that beats you. And he goes, Anna Hungy. And then Anna said, Jade, let me remind you, there is a dark side to Anna Jay. She goes, I wrapped barbed wire around my arm just to win a match. I thought that was great to hear her say that line. She goes, I will do whatever it takes to win. Will you? Jade said, okay, but I need you to understand who I am and where we are. This is that bitch show. Wah, 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 wah. So anyway, so there you go. It's good. Anna Jay and Jade. Good luck, Anna Jay. This is another one. This is another match. I'm not going to be pretty in the ring, I don't think.
Dude, I'll admit, I almost have to apologize to Jade Cargill for picking her as my worst on the mic of 2021. Cause that Anna Jay promo was not the greatest. Her line about the barbed wire, I thought, yes, that was very cool. But her delivery was just, ugh.
Yeah.
Like, and again, like all jokes aside, that was an awkward, really awkward segment. I kind of looked at that and said, okay, that's not anything I'm interested at all in watching.
Yeah. It did nothing for me either. You know, I guess it's good that Jade can really, honestly, they're the best when Jade can just stand there and not really have to do anything else.
Yep. So for sure.
I guess we should take that into consideration.
But even, like, the thing is, though, even Johnny Silver and Mark Sterling weren't that good. You know, like, I mean, Johnny Silver was funny, you know, Anna Hungy and all this kind of stuff. But, like, you know, like, if you're gonna put Jade in there, like, I don't know, Mark, someone needs to improve some sort of promo skill because Mark's not great, and it's not helping Jade's cause at all.
Yeah, it would take a lot to help that. I think. It's kind of the one misfire at the moment.
No, I am not going to be negative. It's 2022. It's only January 20th. I'm going to give this a chance, but like, she still needs help though for sure.
Yeah, give it all the chances you want, but I'd rather you give her some help. That's what I would have. Okay. After this, it's tag team time. Malakai Black and his new recruit, Brody King, taking on the Varsity Blondes. Did they give them a name? Were they the Black and King? Were they calling them Kings of the Black World? Did they say that?
Oh, you know what? I can't remember what it was.
Isn't that what it was? I couldn't quite hear what it was. I think that's what it was, like Kings of the Black World or something.
All right, keep going. I'll look it up and I'll see if I can find it.
Well, not a lot to talk about in this match.
True.
You know, Julie Hart did come out with the Blondes. She's still got that eye patch on. They did a weird spot where Brian Pillman Jr. wanted to do his kind of patented springboard, you know, jump up to the top rope, jump off the top rope, come down on a guy. But they did it like he didn't have the confidence to do it after he messed it up the last time in that match.
Yeah, dude, so I didn't get that at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like I mean, I'm watching it and I'm like I guess in storyline, where did he lose his confidence? You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what I was looking for.
Well, they were playing off that match they had before where he went for a springboard, remember, and he flubbed it and he fell.
Oh, right. Okay. Thank you. I completely forgot about that. So yeah.
I think that's what they were playing off there. And he tried to go for it and he was reluctant to do it. Like, so he didn't want to do it. They basically used a lot of this to get Brody over. It was him destroying both guys through quite a bit of it. Brody and Black have this double team finisher where it's like Black kind of throws the guy at Brody and then Brody gives him this big power slam. I think they called it Dante's Inferno. I think that's what Excalibur said. It was hard for me to catch what he said there.
Yeah, like they talked really quickly on that, so there was, I missed some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
It was a very short match, basically a squash.
Yeah, it was a squash match, big time.
So, of course, whenever there's a squash, that leaves you time to cut promos afterwards. So Black cuts a promo.
Was it Kings of the Black Throne or something like that?
Is that what it is?
I think that's it. Yeah.
Okay. I had
the Kings World of the Black Throne. Yeah.
I had World. Okay. Throne. That makes sense. Kings of the Black Throne. Okay. Okay. So, yeah, Black does a promo here. He says him and Brody are kind of looking at the crowd and like there, he goes, members of the House of Black, please rise. So I guess that was to get people in the crowd to stand up. And then at this point, it cuts to this weird pre-tape of Pac, and he's blindfolded, and he's talking, and he said, thanks to you, House of Black, I have found a new vision and purpose, and now I truly see you, Malachi. You are the same as every other cretin in AEW. You're self-obsessed and power-hungry, and it's exhausting. He goes, you might have a few spells up your sleeve, but the bastard is beyond your reach. He goes, I suppose this is the moment you expected me to bow down and call you master. And he goes, Malachi Black, I'm going to make a model of you. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on here. Like, Pac's even deadlier now that he can't see. This was pretty crazy promo. And the way it was shot, too.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, I am all for Malachi Black versus Pac. Okay, let's get that out of the way. But yeah, this, like, again, we're bordering on these like weird supernatural type promos when it's like, you know, like those, you know, we've discussed this before. This, they don't always work in pro wrestling. Right. Yeah, and there's a fine line that you get to.
Yeah.
So you've already got to you've already got this weird, Malachi Black thing that's already bordering on the line of, you know, what the fuck. Right.
Yeah.
Now you got Pac doing the, you know, I'm blind, but my vision is the clearest. And it's like, come on. Right. So.
Yeah, I know it is. Yeah.
You know, like, again, I'm it's weird. I'm intrigued by this, but I'm not sure if I like it yet.
I find it interesting when you look at the history of wrestling and how much this kind of stuff has always kind of been there. Always just kind of weird. The dark side, the mysticism, think back to the 70s, you know, you had Kevin Sullivan doing all the satanic stuff in that. It's just like, there's always this side with the mystery, the horror and all that kind of stuff. It's always seems to kind of be there.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I remember, Kevin Sullivan, remember that in Purple Haze, like Don Lewis.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that was my first, like the one I remember, like my first introduction. But even like way back, you had like King Iukea, who used to do those weird ass promos, right? Like, so yeah, this character's been around forever. But I don't know. It's just, for me, it's a miss. Like, it's still not quite there yet. You know what I mean? So, you know, and again, I like Pac. I think he's an underrated promo, but I'm not sure if I'm digging Pac with the blindfold and, you know, manipulating the tarot card. It's like, that, to me, that's not Pac. Pac's a guy that just says, I'm going to kick your ass. You know what I mean? I'm the bastard and I'm going to kick your ass. Right.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I didn't particularly like that aspect either. Right. I'm like, what? This isn't the Pac I want.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So they did a recap after this of Lance Archer, who came back last week. We've got Jake Roberts back. Dan Lambert is somehow attached to Archer and Jake. I don't know why he needs to be. I didn't really like that at all. Jake had some good lines. He said, the value of a man is shown when he's under fire. And he goes, what you have to think about, cowboy, is who are you? And, he said, you call yourself a cowboy. He goes, I bet you're like Clint Eastwood, probably allergic to horses. Now, is that true? I wonder, is Clint Eastwood allergic to horses?
Oh, you got me. Let me check that out.
Check that one out, Joe. Check it out. He goes, and then so it cuts from Jake to Hangman Page. And he says, you want to waste time arguing if I'm a real cowboy or not? He goes, and this was line of the night. He goes, you think Bob Orton spent 8 days out on the road and came home to herd fucking cattle?
I love that. Yeah,
that was the best line. On that one, they did bleep.
Yeah.
And I think because this was a pre-taped segment, so that one got the bleep.
Oh, and by the way, like I'm reading that Clint Eastwood was in fact allergic to horses.
There you go. I kind of figured that. I bet you that's real. Knowing Jake, I'm like, I bet you that's real. So Paige has a great line. You think Bob Orton spent 8 days on the road and then came home to herd cattle? He goes, last week I said I wanted a challenge and it seems like I got one. Goes back to Jake, who said, this man here, meaning Archer, does not wait in line anymore. Went back to Hangman and he said, you want a shot at the world champion? Come and take one. He goes, if you want to fight, I'll bring one to you. Back to Jake to wrap it up. And he said, you mean absolutely nothing to us. When it comes time, you bite the dust. He goes, and it's time. So there you go. Obviously, Lance Archer heading towards the title. Now, is that pay-per-view, or is that just like a hyped-up TV special?
Oh, hyped-up TV special at best.
What I think, too.
Like, if you're going to put Hangman in a pay-per-view match, it has to be a top guy. Like, it has to be you know what? I'll even put Danielson up there. I think that could sell a pay-per-view. It would have to be a Moxley or an MJF or someone of that level. Like, Lance Archer, with all due respect. Like, you know what? If AEW did like the 12 or the one pay-per-view per month, you know, like the WWE did, and they had something like a fast lane, I could see him doing the fast lane, but no, that'll be like, you know, maybe a Fight for the Fallen or a Fighter Fest, you know, or something like that. But I don't see that being a pay-per-view match, especially because they don't have that many pay-per-views, right? So if their pay-per-views tend to be special, and you would figure that the main event for your world title has got to be a special match.
Okay. After this, they go to break. They come back. Brandon Cutler, we see he's backstage with his camera. He's looking for the Young Bucks, but he finds Trent and Rocky Romero. They walk in and Brandon says, no, I'm here to tape the Young Bucks, not you guys. And, Rocky Romero and, of course, Trent were Roppongi Vice in New Japan. And that's what basically happens here. We get a Roppongi Vice, a reunion. Rocky says, look, he goes, well, look, now it's set up for Roppongi Vice and you better keep it rolling or we'll kick your ass. And then the idea is like Trent's like the nice, polite one, right? He's like, you know, calm down. And he actually asked Brandon, you know, could you do something for us? Could you tape this for us? And so Brandon reluctantly says yes. It goes back to Rocky, who says, last week, after the best friends have been losing against the elite, we're tired of it. I just got back from Japan, being in the Tokyo Dome and feeling nostalgic. It was like, hey, do you remember the time we beat the Young Bucks for the IWGP Junior Tag Titles? Trent said, yeah, man, we beat them like three times. Romero said, yeah, 30,000 plus every night. He goes, I was thinking we are the guys to beat the Young Bucks. He goes, so we're putting out the challenge this Friday on Rampage. Roppongi Vice reunites for one night. Then they told Brandon to shut off the camera. But then again, Trent's like, oh, thanks a lot, Brandon, for helping us out there. And yeah, I think we're done now. And that he's really polite. And then Brandon said, well, thank you, because I thought you were going to kill me. So there you go. The Roppongi Vice against the Bucks. That's a good match for Rampage, really, right? Putting the Bucks on Rampage. That might get a few more people to watch it, right?
I mean, that's not like that's a, like, you know what? Like, especially for a wrestling fan, because, you know, they wrestled in New Japan for that, the IWGP Junior tags. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I mean, they even referenced
later in the show. Remember later in the show, they had actual footage.
Yeah. Like, so, showed which, by the way, talk about Forbidden Door. Come on. Yeah. I would be interested in watching this just because I love those matches. And you know what? I also wonder too, like, was I don't know if you remember this from like being the Elite or whatever it was, but do you remember like Trent wanting to kill Brandon Cutler? So I wonder if that's why he's trying to be nice to the guy.
Right. True. Okay. So after this, we went to Frankie Kazarian against Lance Archer. So this is, basically it's a little bit, it's not quite a squash, maybe a sort of extended squash, but, this was weird. Again, I'm like, why is Lambert with these guys? And like, what happened to Paige? I'm like, what happened to Paige and Sky? Where are Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky? But that question gets answered later in the show as well. Kaz gets a few quick shots in, but of course Lance pretty well destroys them. They went into pick and pick, and it was like nothing was even really majorly happening. I think they could have even ended it early and or even done a regular commercial break there. I thought it was a weird spot. I mean, you know, Lance is going to dominate, obviously. So,
yeah, I thought this match was a little too long, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was. Well, it was, right? It should have been probably quicker. Archer tried for a choke slam at one point, but Kaz got out of it for a brief comeback, but then Archer would get control again. Kaz got a springboard leg drop, but Archer kicked out at like one. It wasn't even really a pinning attempt at all. Archer did finally get the choke slam. He did the ripcord into the Helio coaster, but didn't go for the pin, so they were kind of, I don't know, selling that he was such a maniac he wouldn't go for the pin or something. But then he did get the blackout, laid out Frankie, pinned him. Yeah, it probably could have been a little bit shorter, but I don't know. Maybe they thought because it was Kazarian. I mean, I don't know. We don't even see him. What happened to the Elite Killer? I mean, that whole thing just disappeared.
Yep.
So, yeah. Basically an enhancement match for Lance.
Yeah, like actually keep going. I've got some thoughts on this whole thing, but go ahead, keep going.
Oh, I am. That's it. We're done.
Oh yeah, but like then afterwards, you know.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Oh, well, this other the match here. Okay, that's right. Because after the match, Tony came down to the ring, did some interviews, said he didn't understand this relationship between Lambert and Archer. Lambert took the mic and said, you didn't need to understand. He goes, you don't need to understand, Tony. He goes, what you need to understand is that Hangman Page isn't old enough for this. He wasn't raised outside or drank water out of a hose. He didn't come home from Rocky and ask Dad to be a fighter. Obviously, these are things that in Archer's past, he said, no, Page and his friends would just sit inside and play video games. And then he went after Toy Story. He attacked Toy Story and something about an East Coast dairy farmer giving hand jobs to heifers to make soy milk to sell to Starbucks. He goes, you are not mentally or physically prepared for this monster. At that point, Archer just grabs the mic from Lambert and takes over. takes over. Now, I will give it to Lambert for selling the fear. When Archer took the mic from him, he really genuinely did look scared. Archer said, enough of this cowboy bullshit, because I don't think anybody had said bullshit yet. So we had to get that one in there. He said, I'm going to show you what I'm going to do. And the crowd did the big cowboy shit chant. Archer takes Kaz. He tosses him out onto the ramp. And he's about to give him another choke slam, this time on a chair. But then Hangman Page comes out, gets in his face. He slaps Archer in the face. And then they go at it. Archer tried to use a chair, but Page corked him with the cowboy boot. He actually took his cowboy boot off and corked him with his boot. He tried to go for the buckshot lariat, but Archer stopped him. But then Page did clothesline him over the top rope, and Lambert was basically holding Archer back. So, again, building towards Archer and Page, with Lambert in there for some reason.
Okay, so here's the problem. Remember last week we said Dan Lambert ruins everything?
Yes.
I'm doubling down. Dan Lambert ruins everything. So
it's
number
one. It's so weird. I don't get it. I don't get it either, man.
Number one, when I saw Lambert with Archer, I immediately lost interest in this match.
Yep.
Immediately
yep.
lost interest yep. in the match. Yeah, I like Archer. I like Jake. I know Lambert can cut a good promo, but it was like, nope, don't care. Number two. Dan Lambert is like, because he's involved with this match and there's Frankie Kazarian, and all of a sudden Frankie Kazarian gets squashed. What's he doing with Scorpio Sky? Dan Lambert needs to stay away from SCU.
Absolutely.
So like, honestly, I want to enjoy this match and this program, because I think it'll be good. I could care less because Dan Lambert's involved. There you go.
It's so true. I'm just tired of him. Like, I was exactly the same. It's like, what? He's like, and the fact that we were seeing him in the show with Archer before we even saw him with Paige and Sky. It's like,
yeah,
it's almost like it's
part.
An afterthought later on. It's like, hey, you're supposed to be with this guy. It's, oh, shit. We better do something. Like, it is. I'm totally with you on this one. I don't like Lambert. He is a good promo, but I just don't like his character. And yeah, for me, he's one of those guys where I just kind of want to change the channel. I really don't want to watch him. I just,
you know, like even his promo with like the whole thing about like, you know, I think he said Paige didn't grow up out, like didn't, you know, grow up outside and drink water out of a hose. And, you know, like this stuff about like, you know,
I'm so tired of that.
Yeah. It's like, all right, carry on. We've already heard this crap. Yeah. Okay. You don't like young people. Great. Blah, 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 blah. But it's tired and not in a good way. Like, I don't hate him because I want to see him get his ass kicked. I hate him and I want to turn my channel or go get a drink or not watch TV.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really done with the character complaining about I want the old days back. I'm tired of it. Put it to bed, which means get rid of him. So.
Big time.
Okay. So. After this, man, this was such a promo heavy show.
Oh,
insane.
I want to say it's around this time where I really started losing steam.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? No, not quite yet. I'll tell you when it happens. And
okay,
you won't be surprised when it happens. Okay?
You remember this. Definitely me by this point. I'm like, oh, okay, this is insane.
Now, this is you saying that.
Like, yeah.
Imagine what I'm feeling, right?
Yeah. So we're backstage with Marvez again. He's with Dante Martin, Matt Sydal, and Lee Moriarty. He says to Dante, not only did you beat Hobbs, but you stopped these two from being attacked by Team Taz. Dante said, well, and you want to know why? Since Darius, that's his brother, has been out, Matt's been like a brother to me. So I have his and Lee's back against a group like Team Taz. Moriarty said, Dante, you watched our backs. So until your brother returns, we'll watch yours. Alex Marvez just said, oh, well, let's see what Team Taz has to say. And they threw to
the pre-tape.
Yeah, they threw this pre-tape with Ricky Starks and Hobbs, I guess, knew how to answer already. Starks says, my God, Dante, how many brothers you got? He goes, you have a baby brother complex. You think everybody around here is your friend, your brother? He goes, nobody's your friend, and you will find out that you are all alone. And then Hobbs said, Dante, you better have someone watching your back, front, and sides, because Team Taz builds assassins. I love Starks. I want Starks to get more promo time.
You know what? I also
like Hobbs. He gets to talk, the better he's going to get.
So Ricky Starks was good. I thought Hobbs' line was pretty good, too.
It was, yeah.
We build assassins part, especially. I thought that was great.
So we had that little thing there to keep that action going. We go for a break. We're back with another promo. Tony is now. I know. This was insane. In fact, actually, I'm going to take a sip.
Okay. Yeah, you can't just say you're going to take a sip and not tell us what you're taking a sip of. Come on.
What is this one today? See, Katie brought this up while we were talking and just opened it and left it in front of me. It's a porter. It's a porter of some kind.
All right. Well, that works. So you're having a beer.
It's a beer. Okay. Well, I thought you already knew it was probably a beer.
Well, again, okay. I had to ask. So
We come back. Tony is now with Statlander and Red Velvet. Of course, we saw Statlander in the match earlier. Tony says to her, you went through hell in your match. So thanks for talking to me. And she said absolutely nothing. And Layla Hirsch comes busting in, the little heel dynamo. She sarcastically congratulates Statlander on her match. She said, now if only you'd had the same focus in our match. And he goes, and because you didn't, we lost on Rampage. She said, you are selfish. And the worst thing is you cost me thousands of dollars.
I love
cost
that.
You cost Red Velvet thousands of dollars. And Velvet, she wanted to be the mediator. She stepped and said, no, Layla, calm down. She says, we're a team, And Layla's just like, shut up. And she goes, you're always on her side. And Red said, look, it was just a miscommunication and it happens. And then, of course, Red turns around foolishly, winning the Joe Aguinaldo Stupid Babyface Award. She turns around and gets corked by Layla right away. And then Statlander's like, steps in and goes, what's your problem? And then she wins the award as well because she turns around to help Red. And of course, Layla corks her from behind as well. And Layla actually put Statlander in the arm bar and wouldn't let go until the referees came in and broke it up. So I loved it. I think Layla Hirsch is going to be a totally great, super old school heel. I think it's going to be great.
Okay, so let's address the Stupid Babyface Award thing. I don't know if it's Stupid Babyface specifically, but it's definitely the old wrestling trope of, say someone hits you, Dan, for example, and I'm standing there as your friend, I'm not turning my back to that person because who knows? They're going to hit me. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And
okay.
We see this every time.
So maybe the award only should go to Statlander because Statlander, she had already seen Red get taken out, right?
Yeah, like Red, I will give
the benefit of the doubt
because maybe she's not thinking that Layla's turning. But after the hit, why are you turning your head, Statlander? Why are you doing that? Because she's mad at you. Not at Red Velvet.
Right.
She's mad at you. So was not I was kind of like, whatever. But that said, I love the fact that she is she's turning heel.
Me too.
And here's something too. Layla Hirsch was recently on the AEW Unrestricted podcast. And, they were talking about her story, which, by the way, it's really good. If anyone's interested in Layla Hirsch, I totally recommend it. But what's her name? Aubrey Edwards kind of made a joke to Layla because Layla had said something along the lines of, I'm pretty cocky. And, Aubrey Edwards went, really, you're cocky? Like sarcastically meaning, yes, we know this. So if that's the case, Layla is a naturally cocky person. I hope they amp that shit up big time.
What I've seen so far, I like it. There's a stubbornness to her. She's got the right look on her face. She looks pissed off. She comes across as pissed off. Like she really, it strikes me as old, very old school kind of character.
I think so. I think this is going to be fun. I cannot wait. Like when she finally made the turn, I was like, hell yeah, this is gonna get interesting now. And like, you and I have been saying this for how long now?
Yeah,
since we've seen her.
Definitely.
That like,
we want to see her used more.
Yeah, she needs a change. Like, we would love, like, I think we even said, like, I want to say, like, you know, 6 months into AEW or whatever, after we saw her, we were like, we can't wait till this girl turns heel. Like, we said this a long time ago, so right. I'm excited for this.
Yeah. Okay, so continuing with the ladies here, next up it was Serena Deeb versus Sky Blue. This definitely basically was a squash. Serena did give her the detox, but then didn't even try to pin her. And so then after that, she grabs Blue's knee, smashes it on the canvas a few times, and then stretches it until she taps. So very, very quick squash to just keep up the nastiness that is Serena Deeb.
And by the way, she's really, really good. Like, she's a good character. She's good in ring. Like, again, another
one. She's another one that naturally looks mean.
Yeah, she's looks very good mean, at that.
You know, you look at Serena Deeb and you're like, man, I don't want to mess with her. Right.
I, again, another woman that I would love to see more, like, highlighted more. Like,
I think we will. Yeah, I think we will now.
Like, I think maybe you even said it to me, but like, I've seen some people saying, you know, team up Deeb and Layla Hirsch as a faction. Like, that would be a cool little faction, right?
Yeah. Okay, now we finally get, well, we get to see Lambert again, which is not great, but now he's with Paige and Sky, and it's like so anyways, Lambert says, Moxley returns, the locker room scatters like cockroaches when the lights come on, when they hear he wants an opponent on Rampage. And Ethan Page says, well, you know who didn't scatter? Me. And he goes, Moxley, please don't let the fancies, meaning his well-dressed clothes, or the $500 sunglasses throw you, because Ethan Page is up for the task. You can stop looking for opponents, because while you've been gone, I've been raking up victories and rankings. He goes, I got wins over Jericho and the Inner Circle. I've pinned Darby Allin. He goes, do not take Ethan Page lightly. And he said, Tony, as in Tony Khan, if you're looking for a marquee match for Rampage, look no further than All Ego Ethan Page, your franchise player. And Sky said absolutely nothing, even though he was there.
Okay, so that promo by Ethan Page absolutely proves that he does not need to have Dan
exactly.
anywhere near him.
Exactly.
That promo was tight. It was really good. And here's the thing, though. I feel sorry for Ethan Page because you know he's going to lose that match, right? Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? And again, I'm going to say it. Dan Lambert, he ruins everything. Dan Lambert ruins everything.
It's so true. Okay, so, and then, now this was funny, too, because it kind of wrecked the thing. Because basically, it went right from this to promoting Rampage. And the very first thing they announced was Moxley versus Ethan Page, and you're kind of like, whoa,
that's Tony Khan's mother works
fast. He doesn't fool around. They could have kind of maybe they should have. Honestly, like I said, they should have put this segment before you saw Lambert with Archer.
Yep.
I think, because you got to have him with his main guys, or what it seemed to you thought was his main guys. Now it's like, he's tossing them aside to go work with Archer instead. It's weird. So anyways, they go straight from Ethan asking for the match to them saying, yes, here is the match. So Rampage, I'll have Mox versus Ethan Page, Roppongi Vice versus the Young Bucks, which I think will be really cool. This is where they showed the old footage from them in New Japan fighting there. They also said Hook versus Serpentico, and Jade defends against Anna Jay. That's all on Rampage. They did a quick Hook promo video. Tad says he was a phenomenon and handsome. Jericho said right now he's one of the most popular wrestlers here in AEW. Stark said he was a killer already. Taz said just another day for the handsome devil. And then they previewed Dynamite and said, it'll be Cody and Sammy Guevara in the ladder match for the TNT title to unify the two belts. It'll also be the lights out match there with Adam Cole and Orange Cassidy. And we're going to have the three-way with Jericho and Santana and Ortiz. Sorry, not three-way. Tag with Jericho, Santana and Ortiz against Garcia and 2.0. And that, of course, is the Beach Break show. Those some not bad matches there. I definitely want to see what happens in Jericho and Santana Ortiz and Garcia and 2.0.
Oh, for sure. That definitely definitely an interesting dynamic that they threw in there. Now, by the way, I think I mentioned this just earlier. So it was right after the Dan Lambert thing where I kind of thought, all right, I have lost all steam in this show.
Yeah, I could see how that would happen. They did a break here, and for the pick and pick, this is the way to use pick and pick. They had Sammy with his cue cards. He's outside by the beach. The first sign said, "Pretty, isn't it?" It said, "The beach is an escape. This beach is relaxing. The beach is peaceful." He goes, "This is my beach." He goes, "As for you, Cody, two belts, two ladders, two champions, one winner. At Beach Break, you will find no peace. You won't be able to relax. You won't escape. You took what was mine, and I want it back. And at Beach Break, there will be no Spanish God, no vlog star. The Sammy you know is gone. Next Wednesday, I walk out of Beach Break, the undisputed TNT champ. Hit me up." Then after that, they also announced that Layla Hirsch and Red Velvet are on Beach Break as well. So that's cool.
Actually, looking forward to that match, because here's the other thing. I like Red Velvet a lot too. So
yeah,
they get a little bit of a showcase.
Okay, so yet another vignette / interview here, because man, that Tony Schiavone, I hope he's making good money. He's in almost like every segment here. Tony Schiavone's with Matt Hardy and Andrade. Hardy said that him and Andrade had reached an agreement. He has decided to sell Andrade 51% of the HFO. And Private Party and Butcher and Blade and Bunny were all behind. And he said, "Don't worry, guys. I will make sure it's on the up and up, because I will maintain the majority of seats on the board of directors. There will be 3 seats for me and Private Party and 2 for Andrade and Jose." He goes, "I will become the CEO and run the day-to-day, and Andrade will be the president." Excuse me. And Andrade said, "I am the new president. El Presidente." He even said El Presidente. I couldn't believe it. Matt said, "From this day on, we will be known as the AHFO. We will continue to recruit top talent." And he asked Andrade, who was that guy that he was trying to get? The kid. And Tony said, "Oh, he means Darby Allin." And Matt said, "Yes, he is a great talent. And if he wins tonight against the Acclaimed, he should smarten up and come to you and the AHFO." He said the deal was signed and they were off to celebrate. So there you go. How do you feel about this now? I know you're not a big fan of all this Matt Hardy silliness.
I mean, Dan, you just said it. I've been very upfront with the fact that I respect Matt Hardy as of the veteran he is. And let's get that out of the way. Have not been a big fan of this HFO thing. So like AHFO makes it better. Like, really? Like,
I agree. I was totally perplexed by this as well. I was like,
yeah, like really? That's it. I didn't get it. Like, and here's the thing too. Like, remember when, Leo Rush first came in and his original gimmick was that, like, what was it? Like, you know, he was kind of that money lender guy that, you know, remember, like, we didn't quite understand what it
was.
So then, like, Matt Hardy comes out and he's like, "All right, so I sold 51% of the shares and they're going to retain 49%, but like, I'm the CEO and this guy's the president." And I'm like, okay, this just went way over my head, even though, like, I know all the terms. I know what they were talking about, but I just didn't need to see this on a wrestling show. You know what I mean? So, yeah, at the end of the day, I think the only part of this promo that I actually thought was somewhat entertaining was when Andrade said, like, you know, "Yes, we should recruit the little guy with Sting," talking about Darby Allin. I thought that was funny, but that was it. The rest of this was, like, a big question mark for me.
I was the same. I didn't see why this needed to be done.
Where are we going with this? Horrible.
Yeah, so. Okay, so speaking of Darby, the next thing after this, since the main event is the Acclaimed against Darby and Sting, we see the Acclaimed, we see this black and white video, and you think it's going to be Darby, but it's not. It's the Acclaimed. It's the Acclaimed actually kind of mocking Darby and his style. We've got Bowens. He's dressed up like Darby Allin, kind of a parody of Darby. There's someone in a car that's driving around dressed like Sting. It's not Casters, though. It's not Casters. Bowens, they've got Bowens with a scooter, like I guess making fun of Darby has a skateboard. So Bowens has a scooter and he can't ride it at all. He's totally stumbling and falling all over the place. And the Sting character driving the car comes right up and hits Bowen with the car. And right as he goes to hit him in the car, Bowens goes, "Sting!" Just like when Tony Schiavone yells it, which I thought was really funny. That really made me laugh. And then, so Sting hits him with the car, and then Sting runs out to help him. But then Caster runs in with a bat, and he corks whoever the Sting was, and he goes, "It's showtime," like Sting. So, yeah, very funny. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a pretty funny little video from those guys.
Those guys are entertaining, man. Even the rap that they did coming down the ring, I thought was one of the better ones. I always enjoy these two.
Okay, so maybe you can recount any good lines from the rap. What was the line they were talking about? Sting worse than Starrcade 97 or something?
Yeah, so something like, I mean, first of all, they took another shot at gory self mutilation.
I think
the exact line was Sting's going to learn a lesson when we have him looking worse than Starrcade 97. And I was just, you know, entertained by that whole thing. And I think, hang on, I'm just looking it up real quick. Wasn't Starrcade 97 where Sting was supposed to win he was supposed to win against Hollywood Hulk Hogan and they were supposed to do a fast count. But apparently, I'm not going to say Hogan did. So he was supposed to win by fast count, but the ref didn't do a real fast count.
Right.
And I think that was when Bret Hart came out and was, you know, kind of was the special enforcer and ended up restarting the match. And then that's where Sting submitted Hogan. But it made Sting look like a chump because he actually got pinned by a normal count. And the rumor was Hogan had told the ref not to do a fast count. Right. So he did look like an idiot.
So we get into the match here. They also smashed a skateboard in the ring before the match started. The Darby and Sting come out. The Acclaimed jump on them right away. They took out Sting and then they wrapped the chair around Darby's head and they ran him into the post. And this is before the match even started. So they went after Darby right away. The doctors are checking on Darby. They tell Sting that's it. He's done. And it's like, do you want to carry on your own? The ref's going, Sting, do you want to? You know, even for wrestling, it's somewhat ludicrous that the idea is when the partner's taken out, the match isn't thrown out. It's like, well, does the other guy want to go against two guys on his own? Okay, yeah, sure. Which I always thought was kind of weird, but that's always what happens. So it becomes a handicap match. Darby's taken out of there. We see them drag him out of there. Sting gets to go wild for a little bit. You know, it's the whole idea that Sting won't back down from a fight.
He looked good too.
What's that? Sorry.
He looked good too during his little offense there at the beginning of the match.
The way they book Sting and the way he works in the matches is so smart.
So absolutely.
You know, he did a Stinger splash. He went for a Stinger splash, but Bowens had removed the turnbuckle. So Sting hits that, and that's right when they go into pick and pick, which actually the pick and pick featured an ad for that Wipeout show that John Cena is in. Sting got the Scorpion Deathlock on Caster at one point, but Bowens end up breaking it up. Bowens goes for the boombox. He corks Sting. They were about to use the steps on Sting again, and Caster is standing on the metal steps, and Bowens is setting up Sting, and Darby just comes flying out of the crowd. The camera didn't really catch it, I think, the best it could, but Darby just came flying out of the crowd, hits Caster, who was standing on the steps, and just takes him right out. Was insane looking spot. Crowd totally loved that.
Dude, that came out of nowhere, man.
It like was so crazy. Like, the dive was just insane. So the crowd's going wild. So they get back into the ring, and this is Darby's chance to tag Sting. He does the coffin drop on both of them on the outside. He gets the code red on one of them for a near fall. You know, really, it's basically Darby against both of them at this point. Sting did break up one pin attempt and tossed both of them onto the ramp. Sting went over by the announce table, and then Sting does this crazy dive off the ramp onto Caster. And I think was Caster, it looked like Caster was supposed to be on a table, because there was a table there, but if you look at it, the table didn't really play a part in what they did.
Yeah, I think Sting, because it wasn't like Caster was lying on the table.
No,
it was almost like he was like bending over the table. So Sting, like, I mean, it was generally speaking a safe enough looking landing, because Sting did get the table. But
yeah,
what concerned me more was just prior to that dive, like, you could see that Sting was tired. Like, he's down
he
and
was.
He's. He's sucking air, and I'm like, ooh, if he's going to dive, man, like I was kind of scared for that.
But the dive looked great. I mean,
he
pulled
to that
it off.
Point, he looked tired, and it was like, ooh, like, I was a little worried there, I guess is what I'm getting at.
So we go back to the ring. Bowens hit the top turnbuckle, and that allowed him to do the cutter. Oh, no, that allowed Darby to do the cutter. And the coffin drop on him, and he got the pin. So Darby pins Bowens. Darby and Sting win the match. And that's basically the show. They left him a little bit at the end so they could celebrate, but that was basically the end of the show, and they hyped Rampage for Friday. So there you go. A very, very, very promo-heavy show. But you know what? You have to have shows like this. Like, next week, you're going to get Beach Blast, and you're going to get – or Beach Break, and you're going to get – bigger, higher end matches. It'll probably be more matches, less talking. You know, you just have to have shows like this one every once in a while to keep things moving. So it did seem to be a lot at times, but the other point is that most of the stuff was good. So even though there's a lot of it, it was all still pretty good and setting up stuff you're looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, like here's the thing. Okay, let's really quickly though, just a quick comment on this match. I'm a little torn about it, because I love Sting. He's, you know, I grew up with the guy, and I like the Sting and Darby matchup. So I'm happy to see them win as a fan, but the Acclaimed is the number one contender for the tag team belts. So, you know, like, I kind of was, you know, you almost think you would want them to win because they're the number one contender. Even if it was, say, by, like, you know, like, let's say they had beaten Sting as a 2-on-1, you know, like, that protects Sting a little bit. So to have them lose, I was a little disappointed, again, because they're the number one contenders.
That's a good point.
Right?
That's
so,
a good point. Yep. Yep.
But that said, I mean, it was fun. Like, I'm entertained by the Acclaimed, and I like Sting and Darby. And I had to point that out. And yeah, like, to your point, coming back more for an overall perspective, you're right. This was a promo heavy show, but they were due for a heavy promo show, because the last few shows have been pretty action oriented. Like, I mean, you think about, you know, from the Danielson Page matches, right, in late December. I think that one was like the first one is December 15th, and now we're about a month into it. Most of those shows have been pretty, you know, action heavy, so to speak. So you're right, they did have you know, a promo show that they had to do, but man, like, this one, like, this was weird. It was one of the few shows lately where I kind of thought, all right, this is starting to drag now, right? Because of all the promos that they had. Although, you know, when we talk about the ratings, like, it's completely opposite to what every other person thought. So
this is definitely one of those shows that keeps my typing skills finely honed. Okay, so let's talk about the ratings, though, Joe, because you already knew what was going on before we started, and it's pretty interesting, particularly with this show. So
yeah,
like, lay it on us here.
So here's the thing. Okay, actually, no, let me get to the numbers first. So they did 1.032 million viewers. So they broke the million mark. They did 0.44 in the demo, and that was number one in the night. And like
number
just the,
one in the night. That's
number
amazing.
One in the night. So to like they were up against some NBA. They were up against the Tucker Carlson show, which they're always up against. Real Housewives of OC. And I remember when AEW Dynamite first started, Real Housewives would consistently beat AEW.
Yes,
right.
So, yes.
So, I mean, great night for them, like from a numbers perspective, for anyone who cares about that stuff. But I find it funny because shows that you and I tend to really, really like are the shows that don't do as well in the ratings as we would think. Whereas this show, and I can't remember if we talked about it at the top of the podcast or if it was off podcast, but like this was an okay show, but like in my opinion, it wasn't one of the best shows that I've seen in a little while yet. It did the best in the ratings, you know, over the last little while. So it's kind of weird. I mean, it's almost like if we don't like the show, Dan, it'll probably do well in the ratings. And if we love the show, it probably won't do well in the ratings. That seems to be the trend with us.
Yeah, it is definitely interesting for sure. Yeah, I mean, it was a show you needed to do because you want to keep all this stuff moving along. And honestly, like I said, that's what the TV needs to be. Like the TV doesn't need to be stellar every week. Right. No. And that's, I think, something that they have such a good grip on. It's like, okay, Beach Blast, here's a special show. We'll have this. And then in, you know, a couple of 2 or 3 weeks of regular, and then we'll have something special again. I really like the way they do that. And you would have shows like this when we were kids too, where there would just be like a whole bunch of jobber matches and maybe a little bit of story mixed in and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed it. So I'm happy to see what's going to happen next. And except for anything with Jade. But the other thing is, the one thing I am bugged out, where's Miro? Miro.
Isn't he legit? I think he's legit hurt or something like that. But
is that what happened?
But even then, like, who cares? Like, not
cut promos.
That,
yeah.
Like, where are the vignettes? Like, why are they only on Rampage? You know what I mean? And like,
but there's nowhere. Like, there's nothing. Like,
yeah. Like, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, there was a Miro promo on Rampage. Like,
there was
a couple weeks ago. Yeah, but we haven't really seen much of him, and I'm just kind of wondering, like, what is going on here? Because, you know, like he's a person that a lot of people are, you know, are waiting to come back.
I want to see him on there. Yeah.
Like, I mean, and the only thing is the last I had heard or read, and this was like, you know, a couple weeks ago, was that he was injured and he was working through some sort of injury, but there hasn't really been a lot of talk about him since. So
yeah,
don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Would like to know, but more importantly, let's get him back on the TV there.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's it for this week, folks. We will put it to bed now and check out all the other podcasts here. There's so many other, it's so much amazing good stuff to listen to when it comes to professional wrestling and what we have here. So make sure you check out some of the other stuff as well. Joe, anything to add before we put it to bed for this?
Yeah,
week?
Actually, Boris had mentioned that we were on the free feed this week. So anyone out there who has not who's not part of our Patreon, please check us out. Patreon.com/SNMEradio. Not only, you know, will you hear Dan and I every week, but we've got a show covering all the major shows in wrestling. So we've got, you know, Mark and Jason with, you know, talking about Raw. We've got the Smack Daddies talking about SmackDown, you know, Boris and Matt talking about NXT 2.0 and other wrestling. And then you've got the Dark Side of the Elite guys talking about Rampage. So we've got all your wrestling needs covered. It's a buck a week. So
yeah, exactly.
Check us out, man.
There's other actual little bonus stuff. Jay puts some of his extracurricular stuff on there. My weekly musical radio show also goes on there as well. So you get to see other sides and other things that we get to do besides professional wrestling as well. So it really is a pretty cool, unique setup.
Absolutely. Again, that's patreon.com/SNME radio. Check us out. Oh, and last but not least, we got Mike McGuire heading up the big show. And he's a stud. He's sounding really good. Mike, again, check us out. And shout out to Mike regarding people not caring about Marvel and DC. You got two old fucks here that care about it, Mike. So again, if you got a problem, we're going to come find you. We're going to have words.
Oh, jeez. No, I hope he doesn't pull Bill Maher and just get all cranky like an old man.
You know,
tirade on how Marvel movies are bad and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, please.
No, all jokes aside, I've seen some pictures of Mike's sort of like, you know, his collectible room. Respect, man. That guy's got a lot of stuff going on.
Super helmet or something.
hell yeah, baby. Yeah,
exactly. Perfect. Let's just end it just like that.
All right, so we're out. And guess what? We're better than you, and you know it.
So there you have it. That podcast can be delivered to you each and every week right into your inbox, along with all of our other podcasts from Sunday night's main event. We're not just on Sunday nights. We're on each and every day, and you can listen on demand. And along with our wrestling podcast, we also add in a weekly 3-hour trivia show that I host on terrestrial radio across Canada. And we also add in Dan the Mouth Lavransky. Well, he loves two things in life. One is wrestling and the other is music. So we have Dr. Mouth's Rock and Roll Lunch Party for you each and every week as well. Because you know what, guys? There's more to life than wrestling. For all of these podcasts, sign up at patreon.com/SNME radio. Only $1 a week. Hey, it's a pretty good deal. Patreon.com/SNME radio. Don't you dare miss it.